Hello, this is Hugh Baird. I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here tonight with State Senator Lindsey Williams and her guest, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Williams this evening or her guest, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad at any time. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad at any time. We'll also be having 3 live poll questions you'll be able to participate in. And again, if you have a question for Senator Williams or a guest, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Lindsey Williams.
Thank you, Hugh, and thank you to all the residents participating in tonight's call. Some of the best feedback and ideas I receive come directly from when I'm speaking to constituents, so I'm really happy that you're joining me. I'm Senator Lindsey Williams. I'm holding this live telephone town hall where I'm joined by my special guest, Cheryl Kleinman from the Education Law Center. We'll be discussing the topic of education and to answer any questions you may have. This format will allow you to listen in and even ask a question from your couch right at home. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press star 3 on your phone. So right now, let me introduce my guest, Cheryl Kleinman from the Education Law Center. Cheryl?
Thank you, Senator. Hi, everyone. My name is Cheryl Kleinman. I'm a civil rights attorney with the Education Law Center. We're a statewide nonprofit law firm whose mission is to ensure that all children in Pennsylvania have equal access to a quality public education. I'm happy to be here with you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. We all know how important it is for education. I know my parents brought me up from young, just, you know, you go to school and you do your best, and not only, you know, personally, but it is the future of the Commonwealth that we make sure that we invest in education all the way from early childhood to K-12 to career and technical education programs and any post-secondary. So we get to talk tonight about a whole range of issues, whatever happens to be on the top of your mind.
Senator, thank you very much. Cheryl, thank you very much. Welcome to tonight's call. Senator, I know that there's a number of things that are going on in education. You were at a hearing today. You traveled across the state for that. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and some issues in education that you'd like to discuss this evening.
Okay. So it's been a couple exciting days. So yesterday, Governor Wolf announced a call for charter school reform, a combination of things that he wants to do with his executive authority that we're still trying to figure out exactly what that is. And then also some calls for legislative reform that have been a long time coming. One area in particular is cyber charter, the funding piece of it. And so today, Senator Langerholt, who's the Republican majority chair of the Education Committee, hosted a hearing in his district in the middle of the state. So I literally just drove 2 hours on the turnpike and popped right in here to be on this call. And it was talking specifically about how we fund both brick and mortar charters and cyber charters, and how the fact that we are not making sure that they are transparent and accountable for their taxpayer spending, it's actually, you know, putting additional burdens on our local property tax payers. So trying to figure out how we address those issues moving forward is really crucial to our larger funding budget for our K-12 education.
Thank you, Senator. And just as a reminder, before we get to the callers and those that have had submitted questions this evening, if you have a question for Senator Williams or her guest, Cheryl Kleinman, from the Education Law Center, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Williams, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, before we get to the callers this evening, I know we've had a number of questions that are submitted. And the first question that I'd like to get to, and this gets to both you and your guests this evening, and that is a question that, that was submitted from Steve. And the question is, how can education be made more equitable across the state? Education funding be made more equitable across the state?
I think that's a huge, challenging problem that we've been facing, and we've been facing for a long time. Pennsylvania is one of the most inequitably funded education systems in the country, and we have a lot of work to do on that front. You know, a few years ago, we passed with Governor Wolf a fair funding formula that helps to allow, you know, more funding to be pushed to districts that need that money. Right now, it's only applied to new education spending. So it's, I think, in the neighborhood about 13% of the budget of what we spend on K-12 education. So we need to increase that number, but we need to do it in a responsible way. We couldn't, we'd love to do it tomorrow, but because of the way we have the system built, there are certain school districts that, because of declining enrollment, would lose millions of dollars in one day, and that's just not, a school district can't plan for that. For instance, Pittsburgh Public Schools would lose something like $95 million. So you have to gradually move that up. How do we do that in a way that's responsible? But also, how do we make sure that there's more money in the system without raising property taxes? So that's making sure that we're spending our taxpayer dollars in an accountable way in charter schools, that we are taxing gas industry, the severance tax, that we're closing the Delaware loophole for corporations that are doing business in Pennsylvania. So how do we raise money and make more money for available for education in a way that doesn't hurt property taxpayers? So Cheryl, do you want to?
Yeah, thank you, Senator. When we're thinking about the way in which public schools are funded in Pennsylvania, we agree that it's important to look at both the amount of money that's being funded, which in Pennsylvania is not nearly enough, and how that money is being distributed, because the students that have the most needs are actually receiving the least amount of money from the state to support their needs and the resources of the school district. So we think it's important to both, when you're talking about equity in school funding, also be talking about ensuring that there is enough funding for all students in Pennsylvania to have access to a high quality education, and that as that amount of money is increasing, that it be directed to the schools and the students that need it the most.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for submitting that question. It's very appreciated. Senator, we're going to go back to the call. We're going to go to our first caller tonight, but before I do, and go to that question, I just want to remind those that have joined us, if you have a question for Senator Williams tonight, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. She has a special guest, and that's Cheryl Kleiman from the Education Law Center. Again, if you have a question for Senator Williams or her special guest this evening, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Before we go to our first caller, Senator, I just want to introduce our live poll question. For those that have joined us, they can join in. First poll question is, should charter schools be held accountable to the same standards as public schools? If you believe they should, you can press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you do not, you can press 2. Again, the question is, should charter schools be held accountable to the same standards as public schools? You can press 1 on your phone's keypad. You can press 2. If you do believe that, you can press 1. If you do not, you can press 2. Again, if you have a question for Senator Williams tonight, press *3 on your phone's keypad. *3 to ask Senator Williams and her special guest, Cheryl Kleiman from the Education Law Center, a question. Senator, we're going to go to the callers right now. We're going to go to Margaret in Breckenridge. Margaret, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Margaret, hello. Yes. This has been on my mind and my heart for many decades. I'm 84 years old and work every day of my life, and sometimes 6 days a week. I have pay all my property taxes. Right now, I've paid a few 100% over what my home has cost me. I do not understand why the state of Pennsylvania asked the property tax base, the school supplies. Other tax states use the sales tax, and people groan, oh, the poor. The poor get help. They get food stamps. And if they don't buy the big items, then they don't pay the tax. But it needs to have a percentage of raise of sales tax or on more items to make it fair across the board. I jumped party lines to vote for Governor Wolf when he came out, because he promised he would put the tax base on another avenue instead of the property tax. I have many times and politely emailed, phoned and wrote to Governor Wolf about the situation, and I have never received a response. What is your opinion on the tax base to be for finance public schools? I think it's not equitable. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret, for your question. I hear that a lot. People, you know, struggling under higher property taxes with local school districts being forced to raise their millage because we're not investing enough from our state level. We're at one of the lowest levels of funding from the state government, which means that is what is raising your property taxes. Now, whether we switch and move out of property taxes and use sales taxes or what has just been proposed, which is to tax retirement accounts, is a really complicated question. And I know that there are some people, I know my dad, in fact, who just retired, it would cost him $400 more to have his retirement income taxed than pay property taxes. But I'm sure it would be the opposite for other people. So we actually passed legislation just recently creating a commission to study property taxes to figure out what would be the best and most responsible way to take that burden off of property taxpayers and whether there is a different way to fund schools. Because when you're talking about property taxes, it tends to be a more stable, you can predict it from year to year. You can predict it from year to year, and the challenge with other taxes without properly figuring out how we do it is there might be too many ups and downs for school boards to budget. So Senator Boscola, Senator Schwenk, Senator Udichak, Senator Argel, Senator Fulmer, and Senator Hutchinson are the six senators that will be on the Property Tax Commission, and they'll be making tours throughout the state to hear from residents and experts about what we can do moving forward. So we'll be sure to send that information out when they come to Western Pennsylvania so that you can participate in that conversation. Cheryl, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
I just want to echo the Senator's point that really when we're talking about funding for public schools in Pennsylvania, we really do need to look at what the state is doing, because there has been an over-reliance on local taxes, which is one of the drivers of the inequity that you were talking about, Margaret, where communities that have the ability to raise local revenue are able to benefit the children in their community, but those who do not are taxed at very high rates, and the children do not get the same benefit because they simply can't, there's not enough wealth in the community to result in the quality of education that those children deserve and are entitled to. So Pennsylvania at a state level is significantly underfunding public education as we compare to other states. And so when we're talking about where should those dollars from public schools be going, we look to the state to make more equitable those disparities that we're seeing across the state and even across neighborhoods.
Margaret, thank you very much for that question. Again, if you have a question, we're talking education tonight, so if you have a question for Senator Williams or her special guest, Cheryl Kleiman from the Education Law Center, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Again, that's *3 on your phone's keypad if you have a question for Senator Williams this evening. And again, if you'd like to participate in our live poll question, that question is, should charter schools be held to the same accountability standards as public schools? If you think they should, you can press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you think they should not, you can press 2. Again, if you have a question for Senator Williams, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Joy in Ross Township. Joy, go ahead. You're live with the Senator.
Hi, Senator Williams. I have a master's degree in education, and I've been in the classrooms. And I'm really, really concerned about the bullying issue and what it leads to in the schools, with especially in the high schools or the upper classrooms. I believe that if classrooms started early enough to educate the students with adding to the curriculum a book that's called Dialectical Behavior Therapy that teaches students even young enough in early education in that to deal with their emotions correctly, and it would also teach the the teachers themselves that have to teach the course. Why I'm saying this is because when I was in the classroom substitute teaching, I was very, very upset. And it happened more than once in different classrooms where teachers were a part of this bullying and singling out students because they were different, because they might have had a disability, because they were being placed in their classrooms and they didn't want to be bothered with them. And this is where it starts, and I believe that the teachers are responsible, and they're responsible for every student that comes into their classroom. And this is their one of their primary duties as a teacher should be to insulate students from this bullying, and they do see it in the classrooms, and they can stop it. And I'm very concerned about people bringing in guns and shooting each other when it could be taught to students how to deal with their emotions and also to teachers themselves. Because I really feel like it's an epidemic and it needs to stop, and no one's come up with a solution yet. And I also wanted to add that I think that the early education, especially now that children are in preschool and in elementary school, that they should still have a recess where they can learn different sports with each other and a very, very controlled environment and also a secure environment. And I also think that they need to add back into the schools the arts, music, art, even dance, all of it, because children with different disabilities are able to utilize those different courses like music and art to express themselves, and they're not being added to schools anymore, and they should have access to that in the school as well as the major subjects that they will be being taught in the schools. I just wanted to add that to you. And it's called dialectical behavioral therapy. And even the police and everyone else in our whole United States could utilize this kind of therapy for emotions and things that some people seem to be overwhelmed with.
Thank you, Joy. There was a lot there, but I'm going to try to touch on as much as I can, and hopefully Cheryl will fill me in if I miss anything. But you're absolutely right. We need to make sure that kids learn from play, from recess. So it's important that you have that time built in, and that we also are supporting arts and music and things like that. And some of that is, a direct result of increased over-testing of students and pushing down from a federal level very rigorous curriculum standards that districts have very little wiggle room to do what they and their, professional teachers know actually helps student performance. Those arts and music programs actually make students be able to perform better in other classes, releasing that creativity and things like that that kids need. So part of it is the curriculum pushed down from a national level, and part of it is funding. When you cut funding to schools, some of the first things to cut are music and arts and sports and those types of programs. So it's a little bit of a twofold problem. But I also think funding directly addresses, the bullying, because it also means that we are not properly staffing our schools with social workers and therapists and eight classroom aides and things that allow teachers, when you have a classroom of 35 kids and some kids are having behavioral issues or things, or they're bullying, that the teachers are missing it, not because they're bad teachers, but because they are overwhelmed and they don't have the supports needed to manage that classroom and to make sure that each of those students gets the individualized attention that they need. And it's very important that we address those early and that we make sure we have sufficient support in all the schools. And you're right, it's happening earlier and earlier that we're seeing that kids in kindergarten and first grade are coming into school with severe trauma and things at home. They've been removed from their homes and they're with a foster parent or a grandparent, and they're coming into the school and they need a lot of help. And right now they're not getting that because the schools can't fund that. Daryl?
I think you're absolutely right in calling out the connection between this conversation and the previous one we're having, and the relationship with ensuring that there's adequate funding for public schools. And we've been talking about sort of K through 12 funding, kindergarten through high school funding, but also this relates to funding for early childhood, funding for students with disabilities, that those are also important components of having a fully and fairly funded public school system. And I also want to lift up that preventing and responding to bullying and harassment is an important part of ensuring that schools have positive and safe and inclusive climates with positive relationships between peers, students to students, and students and adults. And so for folks to know that if we're talking about bullying, we may also be talking about harassment. And for students who are experiencing harassment on the basis of race, gender, disability, nationality, or religion, that those are things that come with important legal rights. And so students have the right to be free from harassment on those bases, the right to be free from discrimination in school, and schools have an obligation, a proactive obligation, to investigate allegations of bullying and harassment and ensure that the parents and families know the results of that investigation and work together to ensure that the child can be safe going forward, that is so that all students can stay in school, feel safe and supported. Yeah.
And if people are having an issue with that, is Education Law Center somebody that they
can
reach out to?
They can contact the Education Law Center. We also, our friends at the Women's Law Project, are doing great work around students experiencing sexual harassment in school, and we have some new and emerging resources that we're happy to make available.
Great.
Julie, thank you very much for your call. Before we get to the next caller, just as a reminder for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Williams, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Tonight we're talking about education, and I just wanted to go back through one of our live poll questions this evening, and that is, should charter schools be held to the same accountability standards as public schools? If you think they should, you press *1 on your phone's keypad. If you do not agree with that, you can press *2. Again, if you have a question for Senator Williams or a special guest this evening, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Lou. Lou, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Hello. This is Lou Newdy. I'm in Ross Township on the North Hill School Board. My question is, what is the progress on Senate Bill 34? That's funding of cyber charter schools. North Hills operates their own K-12 cyber charter school, yet we're still spending about $1.2 million with cyber charter schools. That amount of money is approximately what we had to increase taxes for last year. Where do we stand on Senate Bill 34?
So Senate Bill 34 came up today in the education committee hearing that we had out in the center of the state with Senator Langerholt. It was actually a few of the, actually all four of the superintendents that testified today talked about that exact issue and talked about they had their own cyber program that educated kids for probably an eighth of the cost of the of whatever cyber charter that they were going to, and performed incredibly better for students. Students had real outcomes. They had more access to after-school activities and supports for students with disabilities. They had all the services available for an eighth of the cost, and all the cyber charter schools in Pennsylvania have failing records in terms of performance for students. They are spending the last figure I saw was $22 million over 3 years on advertising. That is yours. Every time you see a cyber school advertisement on the radio or online, it is paid for by your taxpayer dollars, and that is a lot of wasted money that should be going to students. So that bill was brought up as a solution to part of that problem, or one of the many solutions that was proposed today. I'm hoping to see Senator Langerholt, now that we had a hearing on the issue, bring it up in committee. I think we have an uphill battle in the House, but I think we have a more friendly attitude in the Senate. So I'm a co-sponsor on that bill. I will be pushing it because every school district that I've talked to is facing that exact same problem with increasing costs, with students who are coming back into the public school, sometimes a year behind when they left.
And remind me, Senator Williams, that bill is the one that would make it, if a school district is running its own online school program, they don't need to pay for a child to go to another outside online program.
So what it would be is they would, the parent, if they chose an outside one, they would have to pay. But school districts that have high quality cyber programs really should... especially when they're not going to a higher performing cyber program. The superintendents that testified today talked that many, not all, you know, everybody has different reasons for making a choice, and I'm never going to judge a parent for making a particular choice about where their kid goes. But there's a lot of students that they said that are going to cyber schools because their truancy issues in their home district. And it's not seeking any particular programs or differences in what is available. They are seeking to escape responsibility for not showing up to school. And that has created like a cyber shuffle where they go from cyber school to cyber school and then end up back in their home school. And the home school is responsible for that cost.
Lou, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers, but before we do, again, if you have a question for Senator Williams this evening, you press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's Senator, if you have a question for Senator Williams, that's star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Joyce in the North Hills. Joyce, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Yes, Senator. I don't understand exactly what Common Core curriculum all entails. But I know my granddaughter is in third grade, and she's having a lot of difficulty. She's going to be in third grade. She's having a lot of difficulty with math because of this curriculum. And I've heard similar complaints from other parents and grandparents. I'm having a hard time myself understanding because I'm, you know, I'm 69, so we were taught differently, and it was taught very simply, I thought. So it sounds like they're making it very difficult for the children. They're using the columns with ones and tens and hundreds, which I never learned. But it just seems like it's a little bit overkill. Instead of just adding the figures, you know, they're making them put them in columns. And it just seems like a lot more involved than it should be. And I don't, like I say, quite understand what Common Core is exactly, but I just know that she's having a terrible time with it.
Okay.
I don't know if there's going to be something that you're working on changing this.
I'm not aware of anything right now that addresses that issue, and I will look into it and I can get back to you. But a lot of the Common Core was pushed down from federal legislation that Pennsylvania, as a requirement to get federal funds, have to implement Common Core. And I've seen some frustration from students. I've seen frustration from teachers who are now like being, you know, the standardized testing is based off of that. So you have to change it's pretty complicated. And so I'm going to look into what we can do on a state level. I honestly don't know. That's not something I'm as familiar with, but thank you for bringing it up. And I'm going to look into it.
Should I call back to your office sometime?
We have your information, and I will make sure that we reach out.
I didn't know we had, a phone number or anything. Okay, thank
you. Yes, we have it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
George, thank you very much for your question. Senator, before we go back to the callers, we're going to move on to our next live poll question. Our next question is, do you or your child have student debt? If you do not have student debt, you can press 1 on your phone's keypad. If you have less than $50,000 in student debt, you can press 2 on your phone's keypad. If you have between $50,000 and $100,000, you can press 3 on your phone's keypad. And if you have over $100,000, you can press 4 on your phone's keypad. Again, our live poll question tonight is, do you or your child have student debt? If you do not have student debt, press 1. If it's under $50,000, you can press 2. If it's between $50,000 and $100,000, you press 3. And if it's over $100,000, you press 4. And again, before we go back to the callers and our submitted questions this evening, again, if you have a question for Senator Williams, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to a submitted question now, and this is from Brad. What is being done about student debt in Pennsylvania?
Wow, that's a loaded question and something very personal to me and everyone in my that works in my office, actually. So Pennsylvania is usually either 49th or 50th in terms of how we fund higher education, and number 1 or 2 in the country in terms of student debt. So, I mean, myself, I have $130,000 in student debt. If you count up the staff that works in my office, collectively we have $500,000 in student loan debt of people working in my office. It is holding an entire generation of students and families back from investing in our economy, from buying a car or a house or spending all sorts of money in our economy. So I think there are a lot of things that we can do. One of them is a bill that myself and Senator Katie Moos and Senator Vince Hughes from Philadelphia have introduced called the Pennsylvania Help Act that does a couple things. It is debt reduction. So for students who have debt, they'd be able to refinance it with the state of Pennsylvania for an interest rate of about 4%. And it would save students, you know, anywhere from $10,000 to much more, where we wouldn't be making money off the backs of students. We would only charge interest for what it costs to service the loan, send out the bills, things like that. So, for instance, some of my student debt is at, you know, 7%. Sometimes if it was variable, it went up to 9%. And that is just not fair to students who are struggling under that debt. It has borrower protections, so it mandates that higher education facilities disclose the full cost of education to students. So not only tuition and room and board, but books and parking and laundry, and just so students can get a real sense of what it costs to go to that school and what they will be what they need to borrow and what a true cost of education would be. And also then creating an ombudsman that can help borrowers navigate student loans, a website that would put a bunch of reputable student loan companies up there. I mean, when I myself was looking for student loans, I had to do all that research myself and tried to sort out which were reputable lenders, which ones were not, which ones have favorable repayment methods. And that's not really a burden that we should be placing on students and families. We should, as a state, weed out the good and bad lenders and present that to families so they can make an educated decision. And the other piece of the puzzle is how we fund our higher education. Pennsylvania is one of the worst in how we fund both our state system and our state-related system. This session just passed another commission, a higher ed funding commission, and I am proud to say I will be on that commission. We're going to be spending time going around the state, listening to experts and constituents about the struggles that they're facing and getting solutions to the problem and investigating how we can potentially do a fair funding formula for our higher education system so that we're making sure that when we invest money, that we're pushing it to the schools that need it the most. And so I'm really excited to learn what we could do on the front end so that students don't have to take out that student loan debt. So we need to do both. We need to address the cost of the higher ed, but we also have an entire generation that already has student debt, and how do we make it easier for them to manage moving forward. So I will keep you in the loop, and if, when we get those, you know, hearings and things on the books, I will make sure to send that around to everybody, and I really encourage your feedback and participation on that.
Brad, thank you very much for your question. Again, if you have a question for Senator Williams this evening, press star 3. She has a special guest, and we're talking about education. Our special guest is Cheryl Kleiman from the Education Law Center. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Richard. Richard, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks, Richard.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'm going to say some things here that I don't I told the operator that I'm going to say some things that I don't believe many people on the line, maybe even you, haven't. You wouldn't have heard this before, so I'm not trying to challenge anybody here at all. I'm just contributing something that I believe is true, okay?
Okay.
And then I'll let everybody see whether what I had to say is of any merit. Here goes. And I'm talking about the emotional problems of people and children in our society, and the various things that everyone has brought up. This is a very dangerous. These are very dangerous issues: the bullying, the violence in the schools, and so on. Okay.
Okay.
I believe that it's a fundamentally spiritual issue. Now, the problem there is that the spiritual aspect of a human nature, of our character, of our souls and our spirits, has been invalidated in our educational system by edicts of the government based upon a spurious idea of the separation of church and state. Now, I don't want to get into this any more than that. That's just what I believe after looking at this and living in this country for 70 years. I saw it when they stopped praying. I was there when the prayers went out of the school. It had a dramatic effect. Education is not, in my view, a matter of how much money you can throw at it. It's an inside-out kind of thing. It requires great wisdom. Ultimately, that wisdom is rooted in spirit. Now, and that spirit, religions talk about it, but it's not owned by religions. And our country was founded by people that recognize this fact. And that's the reason why we say, "In God we trust," as the national motto. Now, I'm going to make a big leap here because I'm not pushing religion. I'm pushing spirit because each human being is endowed with spirit. Well, it's cultivated and recognized in terms of their soul. That's a whole other issue. But what I'm saying, I believe, is absolutely true. Now, I'm going to make a big leap here. America has always been a country of technology. Technology really drives this country's culture. Technology can be completely anti-spiritual. It can turn people into monsters. It can turn people into machines. It even replaces people automatically with automation and so on. However, in the 1960s, there was a doctor, an inventor. His name was John Lilly. He was out in California. He helped to found a private school called Esalen. You can look it up. He was out there, and he created something called isolation flotation. Now, you may be aware, like out in Wexford, there is a flotation center that's a new franchise. And what you do is you go in there, and you use their flotation technology, and you enter into deep states of relaxation in great silence and privacy and harmony.
Richard.
And in the
Richard,
course of an hour,
Richard, we have to move through this. We have a number of callers.
I'll finish it up. I'm recommending that the senator look into this technology and see if it can be employed in our schools. I think it would create conditions where people could get their spirits centered and stabilized, and a lot of these problems would self-eliminate.
Thank you very much, Richard, for that comment, and I will look into that where you said in Wexford. Thank you very much.
Richard, again, thank you for your comments and your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Mara. Mara, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Hi, Senator Williams. Thank you so much for taking my call this evening. I was wondering if you and your guests could comment a little bit about what we're hearing a lot about recently called restorative practices in our schools. And that is where students, instead of receiving a traditional punishment or consequence, are dealt with a little bit differently when they do something that's wrong, something against classroom rules. Can you tell me a little bit about what you feel about that, what your guest feels about that? We've heard the Pittsburgh public has had mixed results with it.
Absolutely. I think moving towards more restorative practices in our schools is the way to go. I think why you see mixed results and why we've seen mixed results in different schools in Pittsburgh is the supports that are put in place when restorative practices is rolled out. So it needs to be done in a way where the students, the teachers, the administrators in the building are all invested in that program, in that practice, and it has to, when you're also not only bought in and designed with the students and the teachers in that building, but then while you're administering it, that you have the necessary supports so that students still receive that discipline and teachers can still control their classroom. So you need to make sure that there are social workers and therapists and paraprofessionals and things that can help move that process along. Because if you just drop a program into a school without the necessary supports and without designing it for the school that you're in, it's bound to fail. But I think what designed correctly, there's all sorts of evidence that it really does improve the school culture and school climate that helps prevent these bigger issues that we were talking about at the top of the call in terms of school violence. Cheryl?
Yes, thank you so much for this question. I spend a lot of time locally and across the state and nationally thinking about how we promote school environments where it is positive, students feel included, students feel affirmed to be who they are in school, and looks at the ways in which discipline that has removed children from the classroom in the past doesn't work. So we're really supportive of evidence-based practices that look at creating a culture and positive relationships in school so that students can learn, because students are children, and children are in school to learn, to make mistakes, to have developmentally appropriate, trauma-informed responses to that behavior. So when we're talking about restorative practices, I think too often that conversation only happens as an alternative to discipline. And really what I encourage and am encouraged about the progress that Pittsburgh Public has made to reduce their use of out-of-school discipline and adopt as a leader in the state of restorative practices, I think that's encouraging because it's about developing positive relationships in school where students are still held accountable for their actions, but not in ways that result in them being removed from the learning environment. So I think there's been tremendous movement both in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, which has taken the first leaders in the state of saying, we're not going to kick kindergartners out of school when we are hopeful that those policies are going to continue to be adopted across districts across the state, potentially with state legislation. So I think it's a move in the right direction, and I'm grateful for the districts that have taken that on.
Mara, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to move on to our next question. Our next question is a submitted question. It's from Barbara, and she has a question about special needs students. So the question is, where are we on education for special needs students?
I mean, those are our most vulnerable students, and Pennsylvania I feel like this is the theme of the night, has really lagged behind where they should be in funding special education. Now, Governor Wolf has put increases into the last couple budgets, but it really has failed to keep pace with local needs. So from 2008 to 2016, state investment in special education increased by $72 million, which sounds like a lot. But during that time, district special education cost increased by $1.5 billion. So the increased amount from the state for special ed hasn't even made a dent in the increased costs that our districts are seeing, which means that is resulting in cutting of services in our local schools or raising local property taxes. So there is a special ed funding commission that is tasked with, Cheryl, they look at it every 5 years, is that correct?
It's been a while since they've reconvened. I think the last time they reconvened was around 5 years ago.
Due for another one. But at the same time, when we're talking about regular education funding, if that is too low, the first kids to suffer are students with disabilities. So, like, making sure that all of our kids have all of the supports is really critical. And, you know, Cheryl and the Education Law Center has done a great report recently on special ed, and I think, you know, you might have some more to add on this.
Yeah, thank you so much for this question. Students with disabilities are such an important part of our public education system and the student body in the state, and are important that they're included in the full range of educational opportunities available. So that means included with their peers with the supports and services they need and are legally entitled to. And so what is challenging for us as civil rights attorneys in Pennsylvania is the gap between the rights of students with disabilities that are so incredibly strong written in law and the reality that too often students with disabilities are not receiving the quality of education that they should receive, that are punished for behavior that is a result of their disability, and are excluded from magnet programs, from charter schools, from the full range of education opportunities that all students should have access to. So we're doing a lot of work to ensure that both schools are meeting the needs of students with disabilities as they're required under the law, but as the senator said, that also schools have the resources to meet the needs of those students. And so those two pieces go hand in hand, and that's why we do a lot of work both to advocate for the rights of students with disabilities and at the same time ensure that special education funding is fully funded.
And if you or your family are experiencing some issues or challenges with a school district, with a student, with your own student, you can go to the Education Law Center and they can help you.
Absolutely. There are a number of really wonderful community organizations in our region that are doing work to support parents and families of children with disabilities. So, and these are free resources available to the community. So that includes our office, the Education Law Center. I also think very highly of our colleagues in the work of ACHIVA, of Disability Rights Pennsylvania, the PEAL Center, P-E-A-L Center, and Education Rights Network. So, yes, please don't hesitate to reach out to our office where we can either provide you support or get you connected to someone who can.
Same thing here. Feel free to call my office, and we will direct you and help you find the services that you need.
Barbara, thank you very much for submitting question. Before we go back to the callers tonight, I do want to ask our third question, and we're going to introduce that just in a second. But before we do that, again, We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Melinda. Melinda, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Thank you for taking my call, Senator Williams. We appreciate what you're doing tonight. My question is that we receive federal funding to include children. We have institutions such as the Whitehaven Center, which is now closing for adults because we know the benefit of having people with disabilities within our communities. We're seeing a big trend right now of districts getting PDE approval for segregated K-12 centers for special needs children. Some of these centers are pulling back from out-of-district placements. I understand how expensive special education is, and consolidation of resources for some districts who are strapped is, you know, the way to go. But a lot of these kids have already gone out of district due to settlement agreements or NORABs, the Notice of Recommended Educational Placements, because of the lack of failure within the school district to provide them what they need to be included. And I just wanted to know, how does the Ed Law Center feel about this? Because we're seeing this, Carbondale's done it, Hazleton's in the process of doing it. And we're taking these children out and we're carrying, you know, we're putting that carrot in front of them for inclusion, but we're not including them.
Thank you, Melinda. That's a really great question. And I hadn't heard of that, that district's doing that. So I'm going to turn it over to Cheryl, who's got much more expertise in this area.
Sure. So as Melinda noted, students with disabilities have the right to be included in school. And that's an, when we talk about that, the idea is that students with disabilities have the right to have access to a program that's appropriate for them in the legal language is the least restrictive environment. But that means to be in settings and learning environments in which they're not with only other students with disabilities, but are included with peers, and that benefits all children. So we're aware of the phenomenon of schools looking more about how to educate the children that have historically been placed outside of the district for their special education and meet the needs within the district. And from a principled place, we say that at the outset seems is like a positive move, because not only do we think that there's value in having children with disabilities, and again, recognizing that disability is a normal part of the human experience, we will all experience disability at some point in our lives, that there's a lot of value with children with disabilities being included, both for the children with disabilities and for students that are typically developing. And so we say that not only because that's a principled position we take, but also because that's what the federal law requires. That being said, every placement decision, where a child receives their education, what that program looks like, needs to be an individualized decision based on that child's individual needs and what's appropriate for them. And so we would have resources that provide support to parents about how to navigate that conversation if a school is looking to make a change of where that child's receiving the education, to support that child in and their parent in having that conversation through the IEP process, which is the appropriate place to make an individualized determination about what is the right placement for that child. And then I'll just use this moment to flag for everyone, when we're talking about segregated settings, Pennsylvania actually just entered into a settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice, overhauling the use of alternative education settings in Pennsylvania. And there are significant changes for students with disabilities and students who are learning English as it relates to their right to remain in school, not be pushed into alternative settings, and then exit and return to school quickly. So those are important changes. We're going to have resources coming out very soon before the start of school year around the rights of students with disabilities in this changing alternative education landscape. So thank you for lifting up these issues.
Linda, thank you very much for those that question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Lisa in Wexford. Lisa, go ahead. You're live with Senator Williams.
Senator, thank you for taking the call. I just want to touch back on the bullying situation, because my son experienced it for a period of a couple of years. It's turned out better, but it was a long fight. And one of the things that I would like to to just raise to you specifically is that what we've encountered in the school system in talking to parents is that there is no standardized bullying program or policy that is consistent across the board within the district. Every school has its own way and its own policy associated with how to handle bullying. It might have some particular skeletal framework, but they've all employed different ways to roll that out, how they deal with it. And every time you change a school, you're starting all over. Nobody knows how to deal with the bullying. Where I come from, I was born and raised in Erie, and I was in private schools, so I know that it's not the same thing. However, all the private schools in the city had a bullying policy and program, and it was a standardized program, and all of the parents understood it, and it was a known practice that if you encountered bullying, here's what you do, here's how you handle it, here's what they're doing in the classrooms. And without that standardization, people are floating. And the other thing I want to say is that we often hear that, you know, if bullying happens on the school bus, nobody wants to deal with it. If it happens in an after-school care program that's even still on the school grounds under a contracted vendor that provides that school care, the school says things like, well, it didn't happen while we were in school. And that's not good enough. You know, the students are the same students. It's the same community to them. They're their peers. And if we could do something like some sort of a standardization, I think that would go a long way to help everyone understand how to deal with it.
Senator Williams?
Yes, thank you, Lisa. I'm very sorry that your son experienced that. It really makes it, you know, that bullying makes it hard to learn, and that's not good for anybody, and I'm sorry that you experienced that. I was not aware of, like, a no standardized bullying program, but, you know, the Department of Education sets guidelines and helps roll out resources. Maybe that's something that we can work with the Department of Education to roll out additional resources to school districts. You know, it's hard in the way our system is built up to force any school district to have one particular program, but at least if we can help give some more guidance and some more base level of these are the things that you should have, I think that's really a step in the right direction. And you're right, we have to figure out a way to deal with what happens on a school bus and after school, because those kids, while they may not be school property, that really impacts the learning environment when that kid gets to school. I don't know that I have a solution for that, but I appreciate you bringing that up, and we can look into it, and I will reach out to the Department of Education to talk about that. But rolling out professional development for teachers and for administrators that helps them keep up their skills and keep up with new strategies to deal with bullying and address bullying, I think can only help everybody.
Lisa, thank you again for that question. And, Senator, we're going to move on to some housekeeping here before we're coming down the home stretch, but our last live poll question is, what topic would you like for our next telephone town hall? If you want jobs and the economy to be the topic, you can press 1. If you want criminal justice reform, you can press 2. If you want health care, you can press 3. If you want the environment, you can press 4. And if you want gun safety, you can press 5. Senator, just some housekeeping items throughout the evening. Our first live poll question was, should charter schools be held to the same accountability standards as public schools? 83% of those who participated said they did. 17% said they didn't. On our second live poll question, do you or your child have student debt? 59% had no student debt. 50% under $50,000. 22% had under $50,000. 15% had between $50,000 and $100,000. And 4% had over 50,000. And I know, Senator, we're coming down the home stretch, and Both you and Cheryl may have some concluding comments for those that have joined us this evening.
Okay. I'll let Cheryl, if you want to go first.
Sure. Thank you so much for allowing me to join you in this conversation about the state of education in Pennsylvania and how we can make it more equitable. As we're heading into the new school year, I just wanted to take the moment to really lift up that there is incredible work being done in communities, that there are local advocates doing work all across the region and the state to lift up these concerns, to support parents and families in navigating the school system, and that we're having a lot of success in having parents, students, and community members be part of crafting these solutions with school board members, with school administrators, and with legislators like Senator Williams that are inviting us to the table. So I would encourage you to continue to use your voice, listen to the voices of students and parents that are doing this work, and together I really do have a lot of hope for a equitable future of public education in Pennsylvania.
Senator?
Yes. Did you want to re-go over that last poll question, and then I'll do my...
Okay. The last poll question again was, what topic would you like for our next telephone town hall? If you'd like the jobs and the economy to be the topic, you can press 1 on your phone's keypad. Criminal justice reform, press 2. Healthcare, you can press 3. The environment, you can press 4. And gun safety, you can press 5.
Thank you for everyone for participating in the telephone town hall discussion. To those of you who listened in, to those of you who shared opinions and asked questions, I know I learned a lot. I think we had a great conversation and a great discussion. Thank you to my guest, Cheryl Kleinman from the Education Law Center. If you haven't had a chance to ask your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we'll get back to you. We'll also be making sure to keep you in the loop on the Property Tax Commission and the Higher Ed Funding Commission as those are coming up. Please don't ever hesitate to reach out to my office with any questions or concerns, and we will direct you to where you need. So thank you again for your participation. My office number is 412-364-0469, or you can visit my website at SenatorLindsayWilliams.com. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you for participating in Senator Lindsay Williams' Telephone Town Hall. You've been a great audience. Thanks for sharing the evening with us.